Welcome to the RV Connects podcast, an RV tips, tricks, and travel advice podcast that gives you the tools to travel further on your vacations and experience the beauty of life on the road as part-time RVers. If you're new to the show, I am Melina, and that over there is my hunky husband, Dan.
Hello.
And together with our teen and tween, we are the RV Canucks, a Canadian-based family of four who keep it real and help you keep the yelling to a minimum when things get tricky on the road. To a minimum, not eliminated. I think I have to qualify that.
Yes, indeed.
Welcome to the first episode of season two.
So our first episode of season two, the start of a new year. I know that a lot of people are probably thinking about getting into RVing for the first time. Maybe they want to upgrade. Maybe they want to change what they want to do. But you start to think about it in the winter to get excited for the summer. And in a normal year, you would probably want to go to the RV show. But of course, COVID's probably not going to let you do that where you live. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the things you want to consider before you make a emotional purchase and spend a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this will let you think a little bit more long term. As I kind of read through my notes and the things that I wanted to tell everybody, you can certainly rush out pretty quickly and you can put down your down payment and sign your contract and get yourself a trailer or get yourself an RV and be on the road pretty quickly. But I think that if this is not your first purchase and you're upgrading, I hope you would agree with me that maybe this is always an ongoing process so that you're not rushing into something and you've thought through things besides just picking up a new RV. I think probably one of the first things you need to decide is, do you want a motorhome, be that a Class A or a Class C? Do you want a travel trailer? And then there's a whole subset of travel trailer types, or do you want yourself a fifth wheel? And I think Melina and I find ourselves having regular debates about what our next big purchase would be or what does retirement look like.
All the time.
I'm firmly in the motorhome group. I like the idea of the vehicle moving down the highway and driving along and somebody can go and use the washroom without me having to pull over, that we can make a sandwich on the go. And I don't think Melina agrees with me by the looks that I'm getting right now.
No, I'm going to say he talks about the convenience of it, but the only thing he wants is a fresh sandwich. Let's be honest.
I think it would make boondocking a little bit easier, but sure. That's one consideration. Travel trailers comes in all kinds of layouts, all configurations, all different sizes. And then, of course, you've got fifth wheels. I think you lean towards a fifth wheel sometimes when you think about retirement and having maybe some extra luxurious items, but still being able to detach and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think with a motorhome, one thing you need to keep in mind is it's another motor that you have to take care of. So maybe you have two cars at your house. This is a third motor that's going to need another set of oil changes. It's going to need probably more money in tires than, say, a trailer, bit more complicated braking system, all that kind of extra stuff you're going to have to prepare yourself for. Chances are you're probably going to want to tow a little vehicle behind it so that when you get somewhere, you can scoot off and do day trips or do something else. You're not going to have just the motorhome, because if you have just the motorhome, if you need to get groceries or pick something up or you forgot something, everybody's got to load up and then you have to drive and get that with the motorhome.
Another consideration too is if you're going, like when we talk about our next rig, we talk about retirement. We talk about how we're going to use it after retirement when we're traveling full time, or even just take road trips that are weeks long, you have to consider that if the motorhome breaks, that's your home. And if it's in the shop for a week, then it, number one, you want a second vehicle. And number two, you're going to have to budget for, you know, the potential for hotel stays and stuff like that while your entire home and all of your belongings are in a shop being fixed, right? Now, that's not necessarily a detractor, but it is a consideration.
With that being said, there were some pros to having a motorhome.
Yeah.
First of all, the motorhome probably lets you have a bigger living space with more luxuries, and it might actually let you bring more people. So if you have a large family, maybe more than five people, it might give you the option to bring your whole family and not have to take two vehicles if you want to do a trip, because mm-hmm. you know, of course, everybody needs a seatbelt. So there are some options to that. If you're going to boondock, it lets you be able to, if worse comes to worst, hop in the driver's seat and drive away from trouble mm-hmm. and not have to get outside. You can probably incorporate a generator built in a little bit easier than just your average travel trailer. So there's lots of pros to having a motorhome, but maybe think that through. Mm-hmm. Travel trailers comes lots of different sizes, lots of different layouts. It means that you have a vehicle for day trips or to scoot off and get something that you forgot. But it also might mean that, you know, if you're a typical family in North America, you probably have two vehicles, and one of those is your daily one. They're probably both daily drivers or vehicles that get driven on a regular basis, and you're probably going to have maybe a bit of a bigger vehicle than you normally would have. And then you have a fifth wheel. The thing to keep in mind with fifth wheels is they look amazing when you walk inside, and they're very attractive, but you're always going to have to own a pickup truck. So if you don't want a pickup truck, then a fifth wheel is probably...
Who doesn't want a pickup truck, Dan?
There are people out there, maybe they don't want a pickup truck, I'm just saying.
I'm a huge fan of fifth wheels because I love their layouts. I love the space. I love that you can walk in and you have these like super vaulted ceilings. Like, we're tall people, and I don't know, the luxury you can get from a fifth wheel. It's definitely my first choice, preference-wise, because I think it allows a lot of extra room for like grandkids too. But, you know, mm-hmm. That's just my vote.
Another thing to keep in mind with a fifth wheel, though, is you're going to lose your truck bed for storage.
True.
And it's a bigger hitch. So that's all gone inside the truck bed when you're towing, is you've lost the entire truck bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be okay for you. If you don't have a lot of stuff or you manage to get it all into the trailer, that's fine. But maybe it's something that just matters to you. And then, of course, you're going to have a bigger hitch that you need to store in the off season or when you get to your destination. So just things to keep in mind.
Now, on a lesser note, too, stairs, right? Like if you're somebody that has a difficulty with stairs, fifth wheel's probably not going to be your top choice if you have, they're higher than a normal trailer. And then you've got internal stairs usually to get up to the bedroom level. So if you have mobility issues or you're expecting that mobility issues might be in your future, maybe fifth wheel is not the right choice.
And it might not be. So I think this is where I start to talk about thinking long term. The thing I think about long term is maybe what you want to consider is if you're leaning towards a motorhome, rather than buying a motorhome, rent a motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
Rent a motorhome for one of your trips and go on a motorhome. Or if there's a specific type of trailer that you want to try out, maybe you can find that on one of the RV rental apps and rent that, or you can rent one from your local dealer and see if that's the kind of trailer that you want. And I think the other thing I would say is it might even give you the opportunity to tow something and see if you're comfortable with it. You might actually find that a longer trailer is not as intimidating to tow as you think it is. Or you might find that, hey, I don't want a longer trailer, I want to go with a shorter trailer. So what I'm trying to say is that if you invest a few thousand dollars in a rental, that might save you lots of money down the road so that you can narrow down your choice about whether you want a motorhome, a fifth wheel, a travel trailer, a pop-up, a hybrid, all those kind of things. Try it out first before you spend all kinds of money and find yourself not happy. The next little tip I'd like to talk about is buy for service. You can probably always go out there and find the trailer that you want somewhere else for cheaper. But I think that when you own a trailer, service matters. And dealers are going to service what they sell first before they service somebody else's stuff. So when you purchase that, think about 1 or 2 years down the road when I need to get something fixed or I need to get something upgraded. Will I be able to get it serviced here? And you might find that a large volume dealer doesn't focus on service. They focus on getting trailers out the door. And so maybe you would want to spend a little bit more money to buy something for service so that you have peace of mind and you don't need to wait 6 weeks for something to get fixed.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you're going to have to change tires. Maybe you want to take it in to get winterized. Something is going to break, and you want to be able to take it back where you bought it and get it serviced, and a volume dealer might not do that for you. The other thing that you want to make sure is when you purchase that, are they going to give you a walkthrough of your trailer? Are they going to show you how everything works? And the first new trailer that we bought, geez, we were there for 3 or 4 hours getting a walkthrough.
Mm-hmm.
If not longer, will they set the hitch up on the truck? Whereas other places are just going to say, hey, that's your trailer over there, hitch up and off you go. And so if you're new and inexperienced to this, or maybe you've been around a while, it's always a good idea to maybe get that walkthrough. And I think you should think about that when you're selecting the dealer that you want to buy from.
Mm-hmm.
This is maybe the last thing you need to think about in your long-term plan or your medium-term plan is which comes first, the truck or the trailer, assuming that you're buying a trailer. And it's a bit of, does the chicken come first or does the egg come first? And I think I'll talk a little bit more about vehicles later on in the podcast. Before you go out and buy a new trailer, I think you'd probably need to give yourself a little bit of thought put into the vehicle that I have right now. Is that the vehicle that I'm going to have 4 or 5 years from now? Or do I plan on replacing that vehicle anyways in 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to replace that vehicle in 6 months, then maybe your best plan is to take a medium or a longer term view and replace that vehicle first and then go RV shopping,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to buy a trailer and then a truck or vehicle to pull that trailer. So maybe just figure out how long you think you're going to have your vehicle that you have. A couple other things that you want to keep in mind when you go in and you finally have decided that, hey, I'm going to get a specific trailer or a fifth wheel, you have a money budget, and that money budget number is probably an easier number to come up with. Your next budget is your weight budget. What can you tow? You need to know what you can tow, and then you're going to have a length budget. What are you comfortable towing? Are you comfortable with 20 feet, 25 feet, 30 feet? You should probably have a good idea of what those numbers are and what the implications of those numbers are. Because I think we found it really easy to stay within the money budget. It was harder to stay within the weight budget.
Mm-hmm.
So I think probably you need to have a good idea when you show up what your number is when you get there.
Mm-hmm. And this could be like an entire other episode, but the Coles Notes version, I will say, like, just Google how to determine how much weight you can tow, because it's more than just looking at the sticker on the side of the trailer that says this trailer's dry weight is 6,400 pounds. And you think, okay, oh yeah, sure, no problem. I'll add a couple hundred pounds in gear and we're good to go. There's a lot more to it, but there's a lot of very good reputable sites on the internet that will help you calculate your actual weight in terms of payload, in terms of hitch weight, in terms of all kinds of other aspects, you know, whether you're traveling with full water tanks or not. So make sure you understand what goes in to how much you can pull before you even start looking, because that is going to be the biggest hurdle is knowing that true number before you start looking, because you will get sidelined by beautiful looking things that you'll end up with disappointment over because you can't actually tow it, even though the sticker on the side of the trailer says you can.
And absolutely, the person who's selling it is probably going to be more favorable that you can tow whatever you show up to buy that trailer in, they're going to tell you you can tow it.
Yeah.
So maybe you just need to have some independent research and opinions done before you show up so that you can narrow down your pool of what you want to look at.
For sure.
So the next big thing I would say is you need to think about whether you want to buy new or you want to buy used. Maybe you, when you do a little bit of research, and this is what kind of our first new trailer experience was. We were upgrading from a pop-up camper to a proper travel trailer. And when we showed up, we realized that it was only a few thousand dollars more to just buy a new trailer. And so maybe that's a better choice, is to just buy an outright new trailer, because that means it comes with, you know, who's used it, or the fact that nobody's used it, you know, that it still comes with warranty, all those kind of things. There's no hidden history to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing to consider, especially if the used trailer that you're looking at is only a couple of years old. With that being said, if you can find a used trailer and it's the right dollar value for you and you're just going to drive it until it's at the end of its life cycle and that's it, you're not too concerned about it, then maybe a used trailer is right for you. Or maybe a used trailer is a good way to just put a little bit of money on the table, see if this is something that you really like before you get too deep into it. So there's no right or wrong way. There's just considerations about which way you want to head.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing you have to consider is trailers are fairly maintenance heavy, right? And if you are buying it from somebody, a used unit outside of a dealer, you're going to encounter owners who don't go up and check their caulking, you know, twice a year and re-caulk the trailer. And if it's got a slide out, they put the lube on the slide to make sure that everything's working properly. Like, there, you will encounter owners like that who just want to offload it. So knowing what to look for when you're buying used as well, things like soft spots on the floor and water stains around windows and skylights and things like that. But even a used trailer is still a fair amount of money, depending on the year and the length that you're going for. So even throwing down a couple of $100 to have an RV inspector come inspect it is not a bad idea, so that you're confident that when you hit the road, you're not stopping 200 miles later because something's catastrophically gone wrong.
And maybe just ask, why is the person selling it? And maybe you're not going to get an honest answer, but maybe you will, from the history that they give you, deduce that they haven't owned it that long. And sometimes that can be an indicator that, hey, we bought it, there's something wrong with it, we just want to get it mm-hmm. out of our driveway and into somebody else's driveway pretty quickly if they haven't owned it that long, versus somebody who's owned it for 10 years and they're just at a different stage in their life.
Right.
But buyer beware. Just go into that knowing buyer beware. Let me give you a few considerations on tow vehicles and things to just ponder. And by no means do I have all the solutions and all the answers. I think right off the bat, if you're going out to buy a new vehicle, one of the things I always have heard said before, and I don't know who started this phrase, is buy for your next trailer, don't buy for your current trailer, which maybe means if you're planning on buying a bigger trailer, buy a bigger truck or a bigger tow vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to pick out a new vehicle, good idea to get a tow package. The tow package is more than just the hitch. Mm-hmm. It's the connector. Depending on what you're ordering, it's bigger mirrors. And bigger mirrors is just one of those little things there. You don't ever have to mess with clip-on mirrors anymore. They mm-hmm. adjust on the fly so much easier. Probably going to come with a brake controller, might come with backup assist. It might come with an oil cooler, a heavier transmission, extra cooling capacity, the stuff that you don't see beyond the hitch.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that you want to think about. So maybe just go ahead and get the tow package. There's tons of new features that you can, you know, it's really hard to keep up with. And I get so excited when I see new truck commercials because there's inverters built in that you can now run tools off the back and, you know, hitches that lower and backup cameras and all kinds of little things like that, that you probably want to do a little bit of research and figure out, is that something you want? But even if you have it, will that be compatible with the trailer that you have?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would think everybody maybe want to just keep in the back of your mind, if you're going to get a pickup truck, what size box are you going to get? Typically, you know, you can get an 8-foot box, but chances are most people are going to settle on a 6.5-foot box or a 5'8" box. We have a 6.5-foot box. I'd say our family tends to pack a little heavy most of the time. And somehow, whether we're going camping or we're going on to a hockey tournament or we're going anywhere on a day trip, we manage to fill the back of that box.
True story. Plus, it helps me bring home antiques from wherever we visit.
Where I'm going with this is not... This vehicle has to tow what you're going to do your RVing in, but it also has to help you out the rest of the year because inevitably it's probably going to be somebody's daily driver.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a 6.5-foot box, know that getting in and out to pick up just a bag of milk like I had to do this morning was not just whipping into a parking spot. The turning radius is longer. You might not be able to get into that parking garage that you want to get into. All those little day-to-day things that you don't think about with a minivan, you maybe need to think about with 6.5-foot box versus a 5'8" box. There is a noticeable difference because I've driven both and there isn't a right or a wrong way, but I think you just need to remember that you're going to have to use this beyond just towing your RV and it's got to work with the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. So we have two daily drivers in our household and the truck is my daily driver. And then we have a smaller SUV that Dan currently drives. And Dan was away just recently and I had to take Fiona. I can't remember if we've told this. So if I've already told this story on the podcast, I apologize. But I had to take Fiona into the city for a pre-scheduled appointment with her surgeon. Fiona has scoliosis, so we go for regular checkups. And we got to the hospital in the middle of the city, and literally, it didn't occur to me until I was like committed to going to the underground garage that, oh yeah, every time we come down here, I bring the SUV because it's a whole lot smaller. And I realized way too late, like couldn't back up because of the length of the truck. There's like that dip as you enter the garage at the bottom of the ramp. I was committed. And I can tell you there was literally an inch. There was an inch of room between the top of our truck and the roof of the parking garage the entire way. And there were sprinkler heads hanging down and there were speed bumps inside the parking garage. And Fiona had to reach out and grab the antenna to stop it from scraping the top of the concrete. And everyone was looking at us. And I am just glad that we made it in and made it out with no problems because it could have been a very different story. So normally speaking, I would have taken the smaller vehicle. But if the larger vehicle is all you have, you need to think about the kinds of places you visit in your day-to-day life.
Absolutely. And hey, we love that truck and it's like traveling in business class on an airplane, mm-hmm. but maybe the end of the trip is when you're trying to get into a parking spot is trouble. And like Melina said, one of my little tips is if I have the truck and I'm looking at a parking garage and whether or not I'm going to go in, I look to see if my truck's in there already. Because chances are, if there's an F-150 in there or a Dodge Ram in there, you can get in there.
Mm-hmm.
What I will tell you is I did that once and found out that it was a F-150 with a 5'8" box, not an F-150 with a 6'5" box. And I got stuck. I literally got stuck because it wouldn't make the turning radius and I had to get 5 cars to back up and let me out. So just keep that in mind that it's really got to work for you. Now you could also, maybe you're not a pickup truck person and that's cool too. Maybe you want to get a Suburban or a Tahoe or a Ford Excursion or an Explorer or something like that. You can get an SUV, you can get a minivan, you can even tow with a car. But what I would say is do your research on, can those vehicles tow? What can they tow? Because they're all built a little bit differently and you want to make sure A, it's going to work with your life and B, that you're going to be able to tow no matter what you're doing. I feel like just out of an abundance of caution, my own personal opinion is to give myself wiggle room. If I need something that tows 7,500 pounds, I kind of just naturally feel like I'd like to be able to tow 11,000 pounds. Give yourself a little bit of wiggle room so that you don't need to worry about that kind of thing.
Let me tell you a story about a kitchen island. A beautiful kitchen island with granite countertops, with pendant lights hanging over it in the most gorgeous trailer we'd ever seen. And it was like a couple hundred pounds over our towing limit. We did what we're advising you kind of not to do. We purchased our current trailer with our old truck, George, who was a 2000 GMC Sierra. We didn't even have like a quad cab. It was like
extended cab.
Extended cab, tiny little three-door, tiny little back seats. And we bought our trailer and it was like the max of what George could comfortably tow. However, he was getting so old that we knew we were going to have to replace him. And within a year of owning our current trailer, we upgraded to the F-150, which of course tows a whole lot more, and I could have got my beautiful kitchen island with like double slide outs, etc., etc. We've lived it and I still ache for that gorgeous island, but I mean, I'm very happy with my trailer now. But there's a difference between the laminate countertops and corner kitchen that I have now versus this beautiful open concept.
And that's probably a good thing to remind. If you have a 10-year-old pickup truck that towed 7,500 pounds 10 years ago, it probably doesn't tow 7,500 pounds now.
Mm-hmm.
Wear and tear is going to reduce that number on you. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Another little tip I give you on, even if you're going to purchase a trailer, this works too. Bring your kids at least once to see the trailer.
100%.
Because if you can take your kids and lay them down on a bed, you'll know if your kids are going to fit. You're going to know how long that bed will last them by actually just laying them down.
Yeah.
So that's one tip. The other tip, and we did this with the truck, is we found a non-pressure dealer, a Ford and a GM dealer, actually. We did this kind of two different times.
Yeah.
We put the girls in the back seat. We were up front when we walked in, say we're just doing a little bit of preliminary research. We're looking at buying, but we're not going to buy today. Do you mind if we look around? And they absolutely let us out, low pressure, and we put the kids in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably one of the big determining factors was, if they're comfortable in the back seat, it's going to be a lot happier in the front seat.
For sure. And I mean, we have an abnormally tall family, I feel like. Like our 12-year-old is 5'8 already, and Fiona's 5'7, and Dan's 6 feet, and I'm 5'10. And leg space is a huge consideration for us when we buy any vehicle.
So maybe just bring your kids out at least once to try that out. And then when you're ready to go make your purchase, you can leave them behind at home, you know, kind of to get the paperwork done, but at least bring your kids out and make them part of that process. So I think the last thing that you want to just think about is all the potential features. Do you want 4x4? Do you want backup cameras? Do you want built-in inverters? I have seen some trucks that have features that will let you turn on the AC in your trailer if it's properly equipped, so that the AC is running 20 minutes before you show up at the campground and your trailer's nice and cooled down. Do you need backup assist? Make sure it works Monday to Thursday so that, you know, you can enjoy it properly on Friday afternoon, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Let me offer a couple other tips about trailers. Let's just jump back. And this goes with fifth wheels, RVs, motorhomes. Manage your expectations around a spring delivery in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in most of Canada right now, chances are there's a good chunk of snow on the ground. Nobody, you know, the campgrounds are closed. Things are buttoned up tight. Nobody is going out there. But we all know that there's going to be that week in April or May where all of a sudden the buds come out, the flowers come up, the grass is green, and everybody wants to get out. RV dealers can only deliver so many trailers a day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk in then expecting to pick up your trailer, make a purchase and buy your trailer and get it a week later or 4 days later, you might be disappointed. So manage your expectations around a spring delivery. And by that, I mean, think about coming in sooner in the fall or, you know, the early winter to make that purchase. Know though that if you pick up your trailer in the late fall or at a time when you're not actually going to use it, the warranty's actually ticking. So mm-hmm. you may actually pick up your trailer in September, park it, and you just lost 6 months of warranty because you haven't used it until the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
So know that your warranty will start ticking the minute that you pick up your trailer. Ordering a trailer is not like ordering a car. Yes, dealers can order RVs 12 months of the year, but generally speaking, they order twice a year. They make two big purchases. Yes, RVs are made 12 months of the year, but the dealer and the manufacturer are kind of guessing what is going to be the popular model that year, and that's what they order. So some dealers may focus on a specific type, be it fifth wheel, be it motorhomes. Some may just offer a good general selection. What I'm trying to tell you by this is shop early so that you can get what you want, so that they can try and find what you want. But know that they can't just phone somebody up or the specific trailer that you want and that you're going to get it a month later. They mm-hmm. have to work with what's in the supply chain. And of course, with COVID, it's even just harder with COVID to manage the supply chain. And then of course that trailer still needs to be brought across the border with special drivers. So it's a little bit different than buying a car. And if this is your first new purchase of an RV, just keep that in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Think of it this way. Anybody who's ever shopped for a house, you have your list of like what you want in the house, but inevitably before you end up signing on the dotted line, there's stuff that you've compromised on. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't enjoy your house. You've compromised on certain features to get different features. And I feel like that's the way it is with RVs. I think if I were to make a list of everything I wanted in a trailer, that trailer doesn't exist because just those layouts don't happen. And I mean, we've certainly compromised on some things that we have, but I still love our trailer. So you can still be happy with compromise. Don't feel like if you don't get X, Y, or Z that the whole experience is ruined for you and you're not going to enjoy what your trailer has to offer.
Exactly. And I think maybe just think about, what do you need in 2 years? What do you need in 5 years? What do you need in 7 years? Where are your kids going to be? Are mm-hmm. your kids going to be 5 inches taller, or are your kids going to be off to college and university? Are you going to be retired, or are you maybe going to be a little busier at work? Think about all those kind of things and just keep in the back of your mind, is this going to be the right kind of purchase that's going to let me grow into it? And by that, I mean, I know that maybe it's just a touch big for the kids right now, but they're going to grow. So as they want to bring friends, we can kind of expand the family and the experience into the trailer? Or do I know I'm going to retire soon, and so maybe I don't need something? Maybe I can do with something that's a little cramped for a year, but I know that we're going to downsize anyways, or we're going to be empty nesters, and you're going to contract into that unit. And it's okay to go bigger and smaller and up and down and left and right. There's no right way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, maybe what I would just, my sage advice or my wisdom. Hopefully people think I'm wise, but that's just kind of my thoughts on that. I think there's probably a few things we wanted to talk about within travel trailers to give yourself a little bit of thought, because we know that we have your conventional travel trailer with hard sides and a tip out, but within that there's some subsets. So we have pop-up campers. Do you want to talk about the pros and cons of pop-up campers?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we started with a pop-up, but it was a tiny trailer. But at that point, we were tent campers and that's how we camped. And so a pop-up trailer was like a luxurious step up, but we had like an 8-foot box. It was tiny. We still had the two kids, but they were like 2 and 5 at the time. So they were small as well, but we realized pretty quickly, you know, we needed something that potentially had a toilet in it, because, you know, you've heard us talk about our potty. We love our potty. And that was like one of the first things we bought for the pop-up trailer. And just the bed was not going to work for our kids. And we didn't want the hassle of having to put up and down the table every day to make another bed for one of the kids. So that being said, I loved our pop-up. I love tent camping. Like, I love it. I love it, love it, love it. I love, you know, the sound of rain on canvas. I think it's great. And you still get that feeling. You know, you may not have air conditioning, but we had little fans that were in the ceiling of the bunks, and you could just open up all of the windows and you would always get a cross breeze. Like, so there's some really great benefits to opening a pop-up. You really feel closer to nature, but up off the ground. You know, we had a little furnace in ours, so it was nice when it got cooler to keep you warm. It's a really simple way to camp. There's not a lot of like gizmos and gadgets to go wrong, but we live in Ontario. It rains a lot in Ontario. So we were stuck with the problem of packing up in the rain constantly, coming home, and then you have to jack the whole thing up. You can't just empty it and leave it because everything will mold. So we would have to jack it up, set it up, wait for it to stop raining. Then we would hope that we would get enough days between rain for it to dry so that we could fold it back up while it was dry before it rained again. So that was like a really arduous process for us because we had small kids and we were only doing weekend trips. And I would say probably our trip to Pancake Bay changed the landscape for us, because that was our first big road trip. And we kind of realized that that's the way we wanted to travel. We wanted to do big road trips. We realized very quickly that pop-up camping, especially if we wanted to boondock overnight because we wanted to go down the road further, wasn't going to work. So we did consider hybrids, because to a lot of people who own pop-ups, like a hybrid camper where you have a hard-sided trailer, but like the beds still fold out and you've got the canvas bunks, that's kind of the next step for a lot of people, I think, who upgrade from a pop-up. But I realized what I hated about the pop-up, I would still have to do with the hybrid, and that's making sure that I would have to bring in the bunks all the time if they were wet and set them out to dry. And, you know, that's a lot of extra work that I just didn't want to deal with. But that being said, the benefit of a hybrid is that for anybody who lives in a subdivision or who has a very short driveway, you can get a lot of trailer in a hybrid because you don't have the extra length of the bunks, and you can probably park your trailer at home, which reduces the fees that you're going to have to pay to store it off site. So, I mean, there are some benefits, but I think just thinking about how you want to use it is super important. But for us, going to a hard-sided, hard-top trailer was the way we wanted to go. But we knew we wanted bunks. Like, that was a big thing for us, was the bunk room. Number one, because our kids hate sleeping in the same bed together. Number two, because we knew they were both going to be giants based on their growth patterns so far. And number three, we wanted the ability to sleep four kids so that they could each bring a friend as they got older.
And we've done that. And I think grandpa's used the bunks from time to time, you know, so you can put extra adults in a proper size bunk in that. Worked for us.
Mm-hmm.
Pop-up trailers, they will fit in your driveway. You can probably get into it for not too much money,
mm-hmm.
but it's probably a little bit more work getting ready and getting home and unpacking and that kind of thing. I think you nailed it with hybrids. I think what I would, you know, even here's one of the things, if your pop-up trailer isn't too big, you might even be able to push it around. One thing, and maybe you want to comment on this, sometimes it's harder to back up a smaller trailer than it is a bigger trailer.
Sometimes, all the time. I'm going to qualify this first by saying, like, if we were to do this all over again, would we buy a pop-up? Absolutely. 100%. I would go back and I would do everything the way we did it, because I think they're a really valuable way to kind of get your foot wet into camping that's not tent camping. But that being said, if I ever had to take the kids camping without Dan, like, I literally had to find somebody to back up the trailer. And that sounds ridiculous, but like, at the touch of a wheel, the smaller your trailer is, it'll jackknife, right? Like, whereas if you've got a longer wheelbase to deal with, you can kind of course correct as you're backing up a whole lot easier, so that you still end up where you want to be. Whereas I would just touch the wheel and the thing would jackknife and I'd have to do it again and again and again. And it would take me like 15 tries to get into the driveway or a camping site. And it was so frustrating. Like, it made the whole experience unenjoyable. Now, somebody might be listening to this going like, psh, that's just because you can't back up. And that might be, but the mechanics of backing up, I have down. Like I've said before, I can literally parallel park our trailer right now if the need arises, our 30-foot trailer, and that's totally okay. But still, we, you know, you all know we have Sally, our vintage trailer, who's only 15 feet long, and I cannot back up Sally to save my life either. So maybe it's just me, but I don't think it's just me.
Right. And but, you know, maybe the pop-up trailer, and I didn't really talk about this on the length budget when I talked about how long do you want your trailer to be. The shorter your trailer, the more access you have to campsites. So everything's a trade-off. So when you have a long trailer like us, we've ruled out a lot of campsites because we just can't get into them. So
there that means a lot of like waterfront campsites too.
But maybe if you're okay with having to be a little bit more nimble with a pop-up or put a little bit of extra work in, you're going to get the better campsite that you want. There's no right or wrong way to do this. They're just things that we've learned over the years that hopefully there's one or two nuggets in there that help you make that purchase and decide what you want. But certainly wouldn't want you to be intimidated one way or the other. And that's why I tell you that sometimes backing up a longer trailer is a little bit more easier than a shorter trailer.
Yeah.
So there's some things that we would do differently, or things that we kind of have on our wish list, or like Melina used the analogy of buying a house, or some must-haves and things that we would want in future purchases. I think for me, having a built-in generator would be a big thing. You know, something with a built-in generator so we can fire that up when we're boondocking or camping off the grid would be really cool and something I kind of look forward to. That's my must-have.
And I would say for me, just knowing what I know about the road trips we take, and we had the option of this feature and we declined it when we bought our trailer. And number one, that was to get the bunk space and a larger shower, was the fact that we lost a direct door access to the bathroom, which we thought wouldn't be such a big deal. However, based on the roads we found ourselves on, how long we tend to travel in the day, sometimes we just, somebody's got to go and you need to pull the trailer over. And I shouldn't say sometimes, like it happens a lot that we have to pull the trailer over because somebody just has to use the bathroom. But unfortunately, to get to our bathroom, you have to put out the slide. So I would say that would be top of my list for sure.
Yep. I think one thing I'd really like, and one thing I envy, is people who have ladders up under their roof.
Mm-hmm.
Ladder or no ladder, a lot of trailers have rubber roofs. Those roofs need to be cleaned. Seals need to be checked. Having a ladder to get up there is a lot easier than me having to get the step ladder and do that in the driveway and move things around. Would just be so nice to climb up there and do it while we're traveling along the road. I'm not going to lie, we've scraped the top with a few branches and it would be nice to easily pop up there and make sure everything was okay without having to stack lawn chairs on top of picnic tables to get a good look up top. So I think a ladder is a big thing for me.
Mm-hmm. And I would say for me is that we have a bunk room. And so we have two full-size bunks, but on the other side of the room, there's like a tiny little table that folds down into a bunk. And then there's a flip down bunk that's stored up the wall. But those bunks are only like half width bunks. So you can fit an adult on it, but like turning over from side to side is a little uncomfortable. When you have a slide out in the bunk room as well, which does add weight, get full-size bunks on either side or a couch that folds out into like another queen or a double. I mean, it's not essential, but it certainly would be nice to have, I think, for the amount of guests we have ended up entertaining.
These are things we already have, but they're keepers for me. Power awning, power jack.
Mm-hmm.
Big thing for me. Jacking up and down with the hitch system that we have is so much easier, smoother. That's a big thing for me. Power awning. We've talked a little bit about awnings and things you should know in past episodes. I like the power awning, goes in and out. We haven't, knock on wood, had too many troubles with it, but I think that's one of the things I really like and would want on our next purchase.
One thing that we have that I would definitely keep and do again is the fact that our interior ceilings are curved. And this was something like I never really thought about. Like it just felt really spacious when we bought it. But, you know, since we've purchased it and going to the RV shows and into other people's trailers and things, I definitely notice a difference when you have a flat ceiling inside versus a curved ceiling. My brother is 6'5" and he has stayed with us in our trailer and he can comfortably stand up in the trailer, which is like almost unheard of for some trailers. So I just love that feeling of openness we get with a travel trailer that's got a little bit of, you know, it's inches. It's not a lot of room, but it just really makes it feel a whole lot bigger.
Yeah, it's a really good feature that I wasn't even aware of. And I'm certainly glad that we have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would also take a look at the configuration of your outdoor kitchen. If that's something that comes with your trailer, there's some that are quite tall with cabinets on the outside. Generally speaking, that will cut into the bunk space.
Yeah.
Or you might have a smaller kitchen that when you realize that you look at the trailer from the inside and the outside, that the kitchen is slid in underneath
the bunks.
One of the bunks.
Which is what we have.
And it works. The stove part slides out and you can easily get to a small fridge where you can keep condiments and drinks, which keeps kids out of the trailer and hopefully keeps some of the dirt down. What you can't do is, on our specific model, you can't slide the sink out, which makes it a little bit more awkward to try and wash your hands, especially if you're outside handling raw meat and chicken and cooking, or just want to keep your hands nice and clean. It's a little bit more awkward to try and get that done.
Mm-hmm. And if you listen to our episode on like our 5 favorite cast iron recipes that we did in December, we do all of our cooking outside. Like it's very, very, very rare that we use the indoor kitchen. So the ability to have things like our plates and our cutlery and our cooking supplies outside in that outdoor kitchen with like a larger kitchen that's got some cupboard space and our coffee maker and things like that would be so fantastic. Like I said, not essential. We get along just fine and it works great. But having that now, I realize like, yeah, that really fits with the way that we like to camp.
Right. And I think this is about compromises, and you're going to have to compromise along the way. You're not going to get everything that you want. So figure out what are your must-haves? What do you need 80% of the time to make your family happy? Have that on your list and then just think about some of these other things and don't be afraid to ask questions. Maybe my last thing, I seem to have this obsession with power, whether it's in the truck or the trailer or a generator, is a solar connection. I notice that comes with a lot of trailers.
Yeah, that would be
nowadays awesome. And I think that would be really happy, just either to keep batteries charged up or camp off the grid, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think using some of these tips and just knowing what's available, like I said earlier, like if I made a list of everything I wanted, that trailer doesn't exist. And I know that. And I know that you're going to see repeated floor plans and whatnot between manufacturers. And I know at a glance what's available and what's not. So knowing what you want versus what's actually a possibility before you start looking in a really competitive market, like I feel 2021 is going to be, that is going to help you narrow down your choice and be able to make a decision you're happy with faster when you see the one that you want. And I would say we haven't even touched on like vans or overlanders or anything like that. And I think that's primarily because unless you want advice about a 1980 Dodge 300 camper van that I camped in as a kid, like we don't have van experience. And I think overlanders are super amazing and super cool, but it's just not something that we're familiar with. But maybe someday.
Someday. Hopefully. But maybe that's another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit of a teaser. We did find this cool thing on YouTube over the holidays about the Pan American Highway that runs from Alaska to South America.
We are currently planning.
It's on the bucket list.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be a 2021 trip.
No, definitely not.
Anyways, that's just maybe a little bit of a teaser of what we've been thinking about over the holidays.
Mm-hmm. So is that it?
I think that's it.
All right.
Get your wallets out and go spend some money.
All right. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.